I'd like to welcome everyone for Parshas Tetzaveh, Tavshin Samach Vav, 5766. The Parsha itself of Tetzaveh follows very closely to the Parsha of Truma that we learned last Shabbos. And Truma is a Parsha instructing Moshe and the Jewish people on the mitzvah to build the Mishkan, the tabernacle. And the entire Parsha from start to finish are the details of those instructions. And we discussed that at length last week, what exactly is the purpose of the Mishkan, and we looked at a very, very fundamental debate, seemingly, about whether the Mishkan was a good thing, ideally speaking, or whether it was only a good thing, relatively speaking. That means to say that, according to one opinion taken by the Ramban, the Mishkan is a very, very positive, ideal institution in the Jewish people because it is a continuation of sorts of the experience of Matan Torah, of receiving the Torah. The Mishkan assures that the same level of devotion to God and the experience of God's revelation continues in a more subdued form of the Mishkan. The Sephorno takes the other side and says that actually Moshe did not convey the instructions to the Jewish people upon building the tabernacle at this point, but rather several parshios later, Vayakel, after the sin of the golden calf. Therefore, according to the Sephorno, Hashem was, in a way, preparing us for the fall, in coming up with the antidote before the illness, and that really the Jewish people would have not needed a Mishkan except for the fact that they fell to a lower spiritual level when they created and worshipped the golden calf. According to the Sephorno, then, the Mishkan is somewhat of a symbol of a lowered spiritual status where the Jewish people need some type of a physical reminder that God is at the center, and it would have been better had we not needed it at all. We would have just known that on our own. So we discussed at great length, and I would refer you to the CD if you want to get involved in that debate. And in the end, we were able, based on the teachings of the Shem Mishmuel, to reconcile the two opinions and show that they are both valid. Anyway, my intention is not to repeat it, but just to tie it in now with the Parsha of Tetzaveh. In Tetzaveh, again, almost the entire Parsha is devoted to another aspect of the Mishkan, the Kohanim, the priests, with special attention given to the high priest. And not everything about the priests. A lot of the laws of the priesthood are saved till Vayikra, till Leviticus, but specifically about their clothing. And there's one verse which states the purpose of these clothing. The clothing are beautiful and ornate and filled with all kinds of rare and precious colors and threads, gold and linen and wool. It's even permissible to mix wool and linen for this purpose. But basically the purpose of these clothes is stated in verse 2 of chapter 28, Vasisa vigdei kodesh laharon achicha v'chavot ulsifares. You shall make vestments of sanctity for Aaron your brother for glory and splendor. Aaron your brother, Moshe, should be dressed with glory and splendor. That's very important. And I would like to ask the question, why is it so important? After all, as far as what I've been taught, we don't emphasize our clothing, our style, our external appearance, but rather what's important is what's on the inside.
Each garment has its name.
Okay.
And it was way too long.
Steve is commenting that there is a representation of the different vestments, and we find that in the Midrash, that each vestment represents a particular mitzvah, perhaps. But still, I'm going with the simple reading of the verse, which is L'chavad ul-sifaris. The purpose of these clothing is to give the high priest, to envelop him in something which is glorious and honorable. And it seems to run against the standard approach to Jewish view on clothing and on vanity, putting the emphasis, as we said before, on the inner beauty of a person, the character, the piety, the righteousness. Why would this be seen as a crucial component? And I was also thinking that even if you'll tell me, perhaps you will just give the answer and say, well, since the Mishkan is so beautiful, since the Mishkan is so ornate, well, it would only be right if the administrators of that Mishkan would be dressed in the same motif. You wouldn't want to have a tabernacle covered with gold and then somebody showing up to work there wearing blue jeans. Even if they were Levi's jeans, by the way. That's an old one. But even if you'll tell me that answer, I will say to you, okay, fine, so let the mitzvah of the Bigdei Kahuna be subsumed in the Parsha of Teruma. Just as all of the furnishings are dealt with in Teruma, why don't you also say, and by the way, along with the beautiful curtains, the high priest is going to wear the same materials. Why have a separate parsha devoted to the glory and the splendor of the Kohen Gadol? I think that maybe is something that bears note. The fact that there is one whole parsha devoted to the Mishkan and one whole parsha devoted to the Kohanim. Maybe that's something to ponder. So this is the question I'd like to put on the floor. And let's see if anybody has any answers.
That court, the Mishkan, was dedicated to the Israelites and that they would join there to have God join them, but the decor of the Kohanim was in dedicated to God. Therefore, it was for His glory, not for theirs.
Whose glory?
God.
It's for the glory of God. Okay? So your answer is that the clothing of the high priest is to bring out the splendor and glory of God, not the splendor and glory of the priest.
Right.
Okay? That's very good. That's very valid. Okay, any other ideas? Why is the clothing of the Kohen Gadol so important? While we're thinking about that, let me throw out another question. And this is a question which I asked my sons, my yeshiva sons, who came back from out of town once on a visit, and I asked them this question. And they looked at me like I was strange. And I don't even know if anybody got the answer, but I'll tell you what the question was. The question was, it's going to be very vague, I'll try to qualify it. The question is, what is the most important and necessary ingredient for the Jewish people? Okay, this is very vague. It's a very broad question. What is the most important institution or item? If we had to save one thing, it could be an intangible thing, it could be an idea, or it could be a concept. What is the one thing that we would want to hold on to at all costs, even if everything else had to fall? God forbid. Okay, let's go around the table.
Parents.
Parents.
Family.
Okay, parents. Now, I'm talking about the Jewish people is not going to continue in the present form. Well, already isn't in the full form, but parents and children. Dr. Azuri?
The most important thing, I think, is continue to make Hashem's presence be known to the world.
Okay, making Hashem's presence known in the world.
Monotheism.
Got to continue the idea of monotheism.
Shabbos.
Good. Dr. Schultz.
Shema.
The Shema.
I believe the first thing is belief in that there is a God, Hashem.
Okay, so that would be like Mrs. Azuri, monotheism, Shema, really the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's the declaration. Steve?
Mutual respect for each other and the unity in that belief.
Okay, mutual respect for people.
That's the important point.
Okay, faith in God?
I think some form of connection to God.
Connection? So more than just faith?
Yeah, you can have faith in anything.
Uh-huh.
The thing is that with the Sinai experience, is that we experience a connection, that there is something there to be attached to. And without that, everything else falls.
Okay. Everyone pretty much has been focusing on concepts, by the way, which is okay. You know, it doesn't have to be a concept. It could be a thing. It could be a person. It could be the Torah.
I was going to say the attachment to Torah.
Okay.
I'm going to say the oral tradition.
The oral tradition. Very good. Okay. The answer is everybody's right. But the answer is that nobody said how to achieve that. I'm going to tell you a quick story in the Talmud. The Roman emperor was about to destroy the second temple. And the eldest sage of the time was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He had to pretend that he had died in order to get out of the city gates, believe it or not, because there were Jewish activists that were not allowing passage through the city gates in order to talk to the Romans. And this rabbi wanted to talk to the Roman general and try to make some type of a settlement. And so his students pretended that he had died and they carried him out in a coffin. And he was very old and ill. So he gets out and he meets with the Roman general. His name was Vespasian, that's the English name. And he gave the general the news that he was going to be the next emperor. And that made him very happy. And because he was so happy with the news, he said to the rabbi, I will grant you any three wishes. And I'll just tell you one of the three. One of the three was, Tain li Yavne v'chachameha. Give me the city of Yavne and the sages that sit there. And there was a yeshiva. At some point they had to leave Jerusalem because of the persecution, and they resettled in Yavne. And his request was, when you destroy us, when you knock down our temple, please save Yavne and its chachamim and its sages. So he was actually asked this question that I asked you in a theoretical sense. He was asked this question in a real sense. What would you like? And he had to think, what should I ask for? So he was asked this question. And the Gemara asked, why didn't he just ask, you know, please don't destroy our temple? And the answer is, he thought that he wouldn't be granted. Because you can't ask for the world, but maybe if you ask for something, you'll get it. Something smaller. But anyways, he understood that without the sages, we're not going to continue. Without Yavne, without a semblance of Torah, of the tradition, as you mentioned, and of course of the righteousness of these men and their faith in God and their knowledge, the Jewish people have nothing. He didn't ask for anything, a particular building or a particular book. He asked for the sages. So I'm saying this as a way to spark some discussion about our question, our first question. Why are the clothing so important? A related question I would also ask, if we had to pick Truma or Tetzaveh, what's the most important thing? Should we have the Mishkan or should we have the Kohanim? Which one would it be? So one might argue the Mishkan, because the Kohanim's job is just to serve in the Mishkan. If they're not available, we'll get somebody else to serve in the Mishkan, but we've got to perpetuate that Mishkan. But I would argue, no, it would be the Kohanim. Number one, the Mishkan, according to the Sefarno that we just mentioned, is only a concession. Remember, the Sefarno says that we really, ideally, don't need a Mishkan. What we need is to have faith in God and connection to Him. We only have a Mishkan because we need it to help us focus on what's really important. What we really need is the connection. And furthermore, I'm going to recall something we learned last year from Rav Yerucham Levavitz. He said, how does the Mishkan work anyway? How does it bring God down here? How does it bring God's dwelling down here? And he said that, this is such a perspective, such a clear way of thinking. He says that there's this concept that if you have something that emulates God, then the spirituality is attracted to that emulation. If you take something like the color techeles, the color that's used in the wool for the clothing and the Mishkan, it reminds you, say, the sages of the sky. And the sky reminds you of the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory of God. So if you have something that reminds you of God, so then it actually attracts some spiritual counterpart for that. So the Mishkan was designed by God to have certain mirror images, something in the physical realm which copies or approximates or resembles God, and therefore it brings down the spiritual component. But, says Rav Yerucham, what is more resembling to God? Something colorful, something blue, or what resembles God the most? The human being. Tzelem Elokim bara es ha'adam. God created man in his image. The thing that resembles God the most, that has the most comparison, the most elements of godliness, is a person. So let's get things straight. Let's get our priorities straight. What's more important? A Mishkan or a Kohen? A building that represents God or a person that represents God in his actions, in his thinking, in his knowledge, in his understanding, in his heart? Clearly, it's the Kohen. If there's not going to be a Mishkan, it's going to be because we have enough people that are living like Kohanim, like priests. We don't need that concession. We don't need that Mishkan, right? So what's more important than the Mishkan is the Kohen. In other words, Tetzaveh is not just a detail in the Mishkan. Having Kohanim that wear the clothing, who happen to perform the ceremonies of the karbanos, of the sacrifices, that's really not what their essence is. Their essence is not sacrifice bringers, what is the essence of Kohanim? People who have knowledge, who bear the oral tradition, who have faith in God, who have connection to God. That's what Kohanim are. The Torah is saying you need to have people in your midst. You need to support these people. And you have to bedeck them in clothing of splendor and glory so you will, A, realize who brings down the glory of God, who embodies the traits of godliness, and B, you will have a connection through them. That's really the essence of a Kohen. The essence of a Kohen is not a servant of the temple. The essence of a Kohen is not a practitioner of sacrifices. The essence of a Kohen is a servant of God in his life, in his essence. I would read to you, this is why I opened up the Rambam, where he describes the tribe of Levi. Now, the tribe of Levi, they earned their status because throughout the early history of the Jewish people, there were incidents where the Jewish people wandered. They lost their focus. For example, the golden calf. The tribe of Levi did not participate. Moshe and Aaron were from the tribe of Levi. It was their parents that defied the decree of Pharaoh and chose to continue having children and continue the Jewish people. And it's true, Aaron had a role in the making of the golden calf. That's true, and he was punished. But even he was doing it as a means to try to hold them back. But the tribe of Levi did not participate. In fact, they let out a cry, Mi Lashem Eli, who is going to stay with God? Come to me, and the tribe of Levi flocked, and Hashem chose them to play that role in the Jewish people for all generations. We see this repeated again in the story of Chanukah. The tribe of Levi excelled. We know that Levi, as we mentioned, did not get a portion of land. And how were they to be supported? Through the tithing, through the tithes. And listen to how the Rambam describes what the function of a Levi is. He starts by asking, V'lama lo zacha Levi benachalas Eretz Yisrael. Why did Levi not acquire any land in the apportionment of Eretz Yisrael? U'bevizasa imechav. Whenever there were spoils of war, why did they not get a portion? Mipnei shehuvdal la'avod es Hashem. Because they were distinguished, they were made separate, to serve God, u'lasharso, to attend to Him, u'lahoros, Durachav Haisharim, to teach his straight pathways, Umishpatav HaTzadikim, and his righteous judgment, Larabim, to the masses. Shenemar Yoru Mishpatecha LeYaakov V'Sarotcha LeYisrael. As it says, this is in the last parsha of the Torah, they will teach your statutes to Yaakov and your Torah to Israel. Doesn't mention anything about Korbanos. Because Korbanos, sacrifices, is going to be limited only to the time when there's a temple. What about after that? Lefikach huvdalu midarchei ha'olam. Therefore, they were separated from worldly involvement. Lo orchin milchama kishar Yisrael. They do not go out to war with the rest of the people. Lo nochlin, they do not receive inheritance of land. Lo zochin la'atzman bekoach gufan. Nor do they have any acquisition that comes from their own power. Elohim Chel Hashem. They are Hashem's army. Shenemar Borech Hashem Chelo. As it says, blessed by Hashem is his army. Uhu Baruchu Zika Lohem. And Hashem, in turn, bequeaths to them their portion. In other words, Hashem will take care of their needs. Shenemar Ani Chelkecha V'Nachalascha. I am your portion and your inheritance. Then the Rambam ends off. This is a very famous paragraph, which is often quoted, especially in yeshivas, when they're trying to inspire people to make a life of devotion to public service and Torah teaching. V'lo shevet Levi bilvad. This job is not exclusive only for the birthright of someone from the tribe of Levi. Ela kol ish v'ish mikol bo'ei ha'olam. But any person from any walk of life, Asher nadva rucho oso, whose spirit moved him, v'hevino mada'o, and his knowledge, his mind, gave him the understanding, v'hibadel, to stand apart, la'amod lifnei Hashem l'sharso, to stand before God, to administer to him, u'la'avdo, and to serve Him. Ladea es Hashem, to know Him. V'halach yashar, and to walk straight. K'mo sha'asau ho'elokim, which is the way God made him. U'farak me'al tzavaro, and he throws off from his neck ol ha'cheshbonos harabim, the yoke of the myriad of worldly calculations. Asher bikshu b'nei ha'adam, which everyone is seeking. In other words, parnasa issues, issues of livelihood, issues of politics, issues of sociology and war, etc. A person who says, I'm not going to go there. They're important things. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to stand before God and serve Him directly. Hareze niskadesh kodesh kadashim. This person is sanctified as the Holy of Holies. V'yeh Hashem chelko v'nachlaso li'olam ul olmei olamim. And Hashem will be his portion and his inheritance forever, for all generations. V'yezakeh lo ba'olam hazeh, and he will give him sufficient provisions for his sustenance in this world. Dover hamas speaklo, something which will satisfy him. As the rabbis always say, it doesn't say he's going to be rich. It says, dover hamas speaklo, something which will suffice. K'moshe zika l'kohanim uvelolvim, the same way that he gave provisions for the Kohanim and Levim. And Arei David Omer, Hashem Minas Chalki V'Kosi Ata Tumecha Gorali. And who is a good model of this? Who is not even from the tribe of Levi? Guess what? David HaMelech. David HaMelech, if you were to ask him, what's your job? What is he going to write on his W-2 form? I'm a servant of God. And he alone provides my needs. David HaMelech, in this sense, he was from the tribe of Levi. Even though he was the king, even though he had to go out to war and he had to deal with politics, he regarded his first occupation as a Levi. So the point is that I think the answer to our second question, which is what's the most important thing that the Jewish people needs to survive, it is someone from Shevet Levi. It's a Kohen. It's a Kohen. It's a person who will embody all the things that you mentioned.
Continuation,
but not just continuation having population, that's important, but somebody who continues the tradition and makes that the primary occupation, not the secondary or the tertiary or whatever, but the primary occupation. He's willing to forego the luxuries of the world for the sake of standing before God and creating that connection. That is Shevet Levi. And this is something which is just as relevant today as it ever was, because in every community, people don't realize it, but they have in their midst people who have devoted themselves to this. They have not endeavored to take other career paths, even though they could have, but they chose what we call Meleches HaKodesh, holy work. And the thing is, these people need to be supported. And here's where we draw the line. There's tzedakah. And there's some people, unfortunately, can't make ends meet and they need help. But when you give to Kohanim, you're not giving tzedakah. When you're giving to Kohanim, first of all, you're carrying out the shlichus, the agency of God, because God is providing for these Kohanim through the people, through the supporters. So they actually are, whether they realize it or not, important shluchim, messengers of God, to provide for them. And number two, they're not merely giving tzedakah. What they're doing is, by supporting these Kohanim, they are attaching themselves to the most important elements of the world, the service of God. So if I am not in the position to be a Kohen, for whatever reason, but I attach myself to the Kohen by means of supporting him, by means of financial support, or any other way I can be of service, what I'm really doing is, I'm a shareholder, I'm a stockholder in the most important venture in life. Service of God wholeheartedly. And that's why God made this system of support. The reason why God made the Kohanim to take the tithes is not because otherwise these people are going to go hungry. Hashem could have dropped manna from heaven for them if he wanted. He did it this way. He set up this network so that every Jew can have a share in this service of Hashem. That's it. When we give to the Kohanim, we're not just givers, we're actually receiving the benefit of their work. That's the reason why there is such a system. I believe that is the reason why there is a Parsha of Tetzaveh so prominent, with equal prominence as Parshas Teruma, and it's not just a subsidiary of the Mishkan, quite the contrary. The institution of Kohanim is more basic than the institution of a Mishkan. The institution of Kohanim will far outlast the Mishkan. Even when we don't have a Mishkan, we're still going to have Kohanim, and we're still going to observe their ways and learn from them, and we're still going to want to have a share in their work by supporting them. The Kavod Lesifares, the glory and the splendor of their clothing, is just in order to make us aware and a visual reminder that these are the people that really are our backbone. Yes?
Rabbi, it sounds like that you were talking about the relationship between the Kohen and us. It's almost like Zebulun and Issachar.
Mm-hmm.
In that one is sort of playing off the other. The Kohen is almost like the lightning rod between us and Hashem. In other words, that's a door for us to get through to Hashem. And by us supporting him, we get some of that Sahus, maybe is the word.
Yes. You're pointing out that there was a paradigm of two tribes, one that studied the Torah and one that supported it. And actually, as you said it, I was a little bit perplexed because here we're saying it was the tribe of Levi that was distinguished as serving God, and then you're reminding me that there's this other tribe called Yisachar. So who exactly is doing this work? Is it Yisachar or is it Levi?
Can the Kohen do it by himself? He has a purpose, but is his purpose fulfilled if we don't
exist? The supporters?
Yeah.
No. The Jewish people need everyone's role, everyone's contribution. That's definitely true. That's definitely true. But there still has to be a center. There still has to be a purpose.
Right.
And the people that are contributing need to know what are they contributing to and why is it so important to contribute to this. Zebulun has to know that he's vital. His commerce and his wealth is vital for the continuity of the Jewish people, but he has to know why.
Right,
not because money is essential in its own right per se, but because it provides the necessary support for Torah. So anyways, I'm going to leave that a little bit open in terms of what is the contribution of Yisachar, what is the contribution of Levi, what is the contribution of the leadership tribe, which is Yehuda. This is the kind of a thing that needs to be defined more clearly to fully understand it. You can definitely look around the Jewish community as it has been set up in the more modern times, like in the last several hundred years, and there's so many different roles to play. There's the synagogue and those that attend that, the rabbis and those that lead the services, those that support the synagogue and its offices. Then there's the educational system where you have teachers educating the young, and you have those that are studying to be halachic authorities and to be judges and to adjudicate law according to the Torah. There's all kinds of different roles to play, even as you approach the center. And then there's all the peripheral positions, which are vital. But we should always ask, what is the focal position? That's the idea. The Mishkan, at least, centralized everything. And I think it says that, I was going to look this up, but I didn't, but we have a mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage festivals, to go to Jerusalem. And maybe it's the Sefer HaChinuch that says, what was the reason why God wanted everybody to leave their house and schlep for a holiday? Can we go after Yontif? I got to make Yontif. And he said because he wanted everybody to have a chance to congregate in the central place and watch the Kohanim. All the Kohanim would gather and they would watch them and they would see how they live and how they interact. Just being in their aura was something that everybody needed. Because if you're always in your own 4-cubit space, you can be very good at what you're doing, but you can lose the perspective that we're all a nation trying to serve God. And we have to step out of our own space and get together in the central place and get together with the central people and refocus our energies, and that will empower everything else that we do. Baruch Hashem. And it is really, it's a two-way street that the Kohanim are only as effective as those that welcome them. And if they are successful, it's because there are people that are receptive. So, Baruch Hashem, thank you all.